Welcome to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements of Drab to Fab Landscaping. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas to help solve problems and keep you up to date on the latest development in the nursery and landscape industry. For a podcast of today's program and others, visit walteranderson.com and click on the podcast tab. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. We'll be here for the next hour talking about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. If you have a question for us, would like to comment on the show, or have a suggestion for a topic or guest you would like to hear about, you can email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com or follow us on the Walter Anderson Nursery main Facebook page. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome back, George.
Thank you.
You had a nice vacation, it sounds.
We did. We had a wonderful time.
And you went to Savannah?
We went to Augusta, Georgia first and spent some time in North Augusta in South Carolina. And then we went down to Savannah for a few days as well.
Very nice. Very nice.
We didn't buy a place yet. But
I need to get back to Savannah. I've heard it's absolutely beautiful.
It is a beautiful place. The last time I was there was in spring of 1980.
So it's been a while.
Wow.
It's been a minute.
Gorgeous though. Everything is really improved over the years with a lot of the restoration of the old homes. You know, a lot of the places were built in the late 1700s, early 1800s. The place we stayed in, it was an inn, was built in 1847.
Wow.
And the house, the Oglethorpe, who kind of founded the town, built these squares. They were parks. And if you've ever seen the movie Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, you know, there's a lot of Savannah in that, but they're squares, and all the houses and blocks are built around these squares. And I think there were 22 squares. Square has either a statue or a fountain and just inundated with plants. Obviously, a lot of oak. There's wisteria. Some of the things that we really liked were these gardenia shrub hedges in one of the parks. So no matter what time of day you walk through this park, you were just hit with all the fragrance of those flowers. It was spectacular.
That does sound spectacular. It was nice of Sherman not to burn that one to the ground.
Right. And we saw where he stayed a few times in the headquarters. There was a gentleman who took him in to let him live there with him because he didn't want to have other people suffer the indignity of having, you know, a union general living in their house. So he just took them in and accepted it.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I think Sherman say he presented Savannah to the president?
The house that he wrote to where he wrote the letter to Lincoln saying, I give you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But as far as plants go, I mean, Tillandsia is everywhere. Every tree is covered with Spanish moss. Fragrance of flowers. And what's interesting to me are some of the things that we think are, you know, Southern California, like sago palms, you know, palms growing everywhere, jasmine growing everywhere, things that I think maybe it's a little too cold or a little too wet, maybe, but they thrive.
That's very interesting. You know, I think that's one thing that people don't realize with Spanish moss, which really isn't a moss, it's a Tillandsia. When it blooms, it's incredibly fragrant.
Yes.
But you just can't see the flowers. Mm-hmm. I mean, the flowers they're beautiful little flowers. When it's in bloom, if you could spot it, the flowers are about the size of a little bigger than a pinhead, but they're little emerald green tripetaled flowers, and they have just an incredible fragrance to them. Mm-hmm. And I have yet to experience it myself, but I've heard that that's one of the things that is really incredible in the South is when all the Spanish moss starts to bloom, it just fills the air with an unbelievable fragrance.
I'm wondering, I didn't pay attention to that, but I do know what you're speaking of. I've taken photographs close of ours blooming, but I didn't notice that, but there was fragrance everywhere. So perhaps that was
part of it. So anyway, it's on my to-do list to get back there to check that place out.
Well worth it.
One of these days. Let's see, we have classes today. In San Diego, it's going to be backyard chickens with James. And in Poway, it's going to be vegetable seed saving with Adams. So both should be interesting classes. If you think you want to raise chickens, that would be a good one to go to. I'm not sure that I would want to do that, but...
You know, we did it. And I'm actually in the process of moving partially the chicken coop from one house to the other. And it... we had great success with it. And mm-hmm. the chickens, yeah. when you let them out, if you kind of keep them contained where they don't decimate your garden, mm-hmm. They work really well as scavengers of all your pests.
Oh,
they do.
You know, mm-hmm. they reduce the snail and slug population considerably.
Oh, that's interesting.
I had chickens and we fed them weeds.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
They love
weeds. Well, they'll eat just about anything.
They'll eat anything. Yeah. yeah. And the color of the yolks was something I don't think I've ever experienced. So it's so it's beautiful rich. And orange, dark and right. rich. The flavor mm-hmm. is substantially different than
store-bought. Much different. Yep.
I highly endorse it. You know,
if you have the room.
If you have the room to do it.
And your HOA allows it.
And your HOA allows it.
And you can keep them safe from raccoons.
Raccoons and coyotes.
Coyotes and owls.
Yeah.
Oh, and owls.
We always I set up my trail camera and there was this owl that was always coming to the chicken coop at night and was prancing around and looking
into the coop. Oh, that's interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, I haven't heard him recently, but we had a big owl in our neighborhood who would hang out at various houses or on the streetlight. And it's loud. Mm. I was shocked at how loud that thing is. It would wake you up at night. Oh, yeah. It was so loud. And they're big, too. Mm-hmm. Really big. Let's see. We've got some stuff to talk about today. George, you came up with this interesting list of plants. 8 drought-tolerant vines that love California sun.
Yeah, but the genesis of that was going back to the recent trip to Savannah and actually in South Carolina, there are vines everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. There are jasmine and other flowers and just honeysuckles and everything's thriving and they look wonderful. John, you brought that up in some of our other conversations about it doesn't matter how much water you put on a plant here. Mm-hmm. It still lacks the humidity,
right?
So, you know, you can give the same amount of water that a plant in South Carolina, North Carolina is getting, but the humidity's not there. So the leaves take a lot more abuse, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, what are some of the vines that we can grow here that can take that heat and still look nice? And that's how I found this list.
Mm. Well, the first one on the list is the California pipe vine. I've noticed here, though, it doesn't give you the botanical.
It doesn't, which particular. Is actually probably good for most of our listeners.
Yeah. But I have never heard of California pipe vine before myself. It's got an interesting flower to it.
It is a very cool vine.
Have you seen it before?
I have. John? I've grown it. Okay. And it is the food for the California pipe vine butterfly.
That's what I saw in here. Yeah, pipe vine swallowtail.
Yeah.
But it's the same plant, different species than our
Aristolochia.
Yeah,
Aristolochia. Oh, it is an Aristolochia. It is,
yeah.
Okay.
So the giant Dutchman's pipe, right?
Dutchman's pipe.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's that similar to that, same mm-hmm. family, or yeah. I'm sorry, same genus.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen that before. So that was an interesting one. Chaparral clematis. That's another one that I have not.
And I've grown that one, and it grows fairly well and pretty attractive.
To me, it looked a little bit sparse. Is it?
Well,
it is
sparse. Okay. It's not a lush vine by any stretch, but it is attractive.
Yeah, that's Clematis lazianta.
Lazianta. It gets pretty big, too, 15 to 20 feet.
Mm-hmm. And is it a deciduous vine like the other ones?
You know, good question. Really, I don't recall.
It doesn't really say. Because there is an evergreen Clematis. Uh-huh. Armandi. Clematis armandi is evergreen. So that's an interesting one as well. Virgin's Bower Clematis. That's another one I'm not familiar with. Flower looks a little nicer in the photo compared to the other one. That's Clematis ligustifolia. That's one I have not. That's a new one on me. Pink honeysuckle. Lonicera hispidula is California native. It has a strange orbicular foliage to it as well. Mm-hmm. That's one.
Yeah, I like that.
That's interesting. George, you got a good list here. This is all stuff that I have not heard of before.
And that photo of the pink jasmine is credited to David Fays, who died February of 25 last year. And he was truly amazing plantsman and garden designer. If you can still look his stuff up. I was a huge fan of his.
Oh,
he was a very inspirational guy.
Oh,
neat. I will, and we will post this on our Facebook page following the show.
Yeah.
So you can catch it.
We'll see. And then there's the Island Morning Glory.
I'm not a fan of that.
Fan of that.
Calesthesia macrostesia. Yeah.
It looks like the what's the twisting morning glory native bindweed.
Bindweed. It does look like bindweed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rogers Red Grape. That's another one I'm not familiar with.
I've seen that up in Kit Carson Park. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of it growing up there.
Oh. And then Desert Wild Grape.
Looks great in the fall.
Gorgeous in the fall.
It is really pretty.
Yep.
That's the Desert Wild Grape. That's another one I'm not familiar with. Boy, you got me on all of these, George.
Well, you'll get the last one. You'll know the last
California one. Wild Cucumber. Is that the one that creates a huge tuber?
Yes.
That's the size of a boulder?
We have this growing on our property. It sneaks up through the olives.
And it has the big fruits with the spines
right
all over it.
Yeah. I always thought that was a weed.
Well, a weed is just a plant that you don't know its use for yet, or you don't want it in that area, right? An apple tree can be a weed if it.
Weed is something that's grown where you don't want it to grow. So
that's common name is Mara,
right?
Something called Fabius Mara, but it gets a huge tuber.
Yeah, right. It's like the size of a boulder.
Oh yeah, they're huge.
So you can rip the vine off daily, and then 3 days later, there's another one, sneaking its way up from that massive tuber. That's why they're hard to eradicate from a property.
Yeah, you got to get rid of the, tuber that it's.
You know, one vine that isn't on this list that I think should be as a super drought tolerant vine that looks fabulous is Petraea volubilis.
Is that the angel?
It looks like wisteria in a way. It kind of has a long inflorescence, like a panicle.
It's
a beautiful blue lilac type of a color.
Yeah, purplish
and
color.
When you touch those leaves, they're thick and almost like felt. Mm-hmm. And they call it sandpaper vine, common name. And I've seen that thing grow with almost no water at all. And it looks, when it's in bloom, it is a stunning plant.
Yeah, that's a good plant.
Another one similar then would be the Hardenbergia.
Yes.
Which is an Australian plant, which I think when it's in bloom is phenomenal.
Harbinger of spring.
But the minute it's done flowering, it doesn't look like much.
Yeah, that is true. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here in KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. Another interesting list of stuff that I came up with. And Melanie wrote an article about this garden in a newsletter few issues back. I think I can't remember what issue it was in, but the Alnwick Poison Garden in Northumberland, England. And it's located on the grounds of Alnwick Castle, Northumberland. Poison Garden was created by the Duchess of Northumberland and opened in 2005, spanning approximately 1,000 square meters. It houses around 100 toxic, intoxicating and narcotic plants, all capable of harming or killing people. Visitors enter.
Sounds
only
like a good time.
Yeah.
Do they have a gift shop?
Yeah. Visitors enter only on guided tours through black iron gates bearing skull and crossbones warning, and are strictly prohibited from smelling, touching, or tasting any plant. Well, you know, I don't usually go around tasting stuff in botanical gardens myself, but
you know, you say that, Ken, but we've had a number of customers over the years that I've worked here that would come in and ask the name of a plant. Do you know what this is? Mm-hmm. You know, because I thought it was X, and you're looking at it and it's like, no, I'm not sure what it is. Let me look. Yeah, you know, because I tasted it and it doesn't taste like, well, you really just, if you're not sure what it is, you're tasting it.
Yeah.
That seems a little risky to me.
Not conducive to a long life. So anyway, here's some of the highlights of the things that are in the garden. Aconitum napellus, or monk's hood, one of the most toxic plants in Europe. Monk's hood produces tall spikes of hooded purple-blue flowers that are deceptively beautiful. Every part of the plant is lethal, particularly the roots, which contain the alkaloid aconitine. Even skin contact can cause numbness and tingling, historically used as a poison for arrow tips and in assassination attempts. Okay. Symptoms of ingestion include the burning of the mouth, nausea, vomiting, and cardiac arrest.
Doesn't
sound like a good time to me. Atropa belladonna, a deadly nightshade. We would see that over here every once in a while.
Belladonna. Perhaps
most infamous plant in the garden, deadly nightshade produces glossy black berries that are dangerously attractive to children. That is true. The entire plant contains tropane alkaloids, including atropine and scopolamine, which cause hallucinations, diluted pupils, rapid heartbeat, and death.
But that'll keep you from getting seasick.
And
atropine is used as a counter to a nerve mm-hmm. gases.
Despite its toxicity, belladonna has medical applications as an anesthetic and was historically used as a cosmetic by women to dilate their pupils.
Sounds like a good time.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah. And I think they used to use scopolamine in interrogations too.
Really?
I thought I had read somewhere that it has a quality of almost a truth serum, so to speak.
Interesting.
Sodium pentanol? Yeah. Never tried it myself.
We have ways of making you talk.
Ricinus communis, pretty common around here. Castor oil plant. You see, it usually is a weed growing in
We have it on one of our walks here where Capri and I walk.
Yeah. It's actually a pretty plant. Yeah.
Well,
you know,
years ago, Mia McCarville at Cedrus Gardens always had the red ricin plants for sale all the time. And they are very pretty.
Yeah.
The dark red ones, I think, are lovely as an ornamental. But, you know, aside from the poison part.
Yeah. And it says it's a striking architectural plant with large lobe leaves and spiny seed pods, castor oil plant. Seeds contain ricin, one of the most potent natural toxins known, some 6,000 times more poisonous than cyanide. Just a few seeds can kill an adult. Ricin famously featured in the 1978 assassination of Bulgarian dissident Georgi Markov, who was killed by a ricin pellet fired from an umbrella on a Waterloo Bridge in London. I remember that too.
Yeah.
And
there was a ricin attack on the subway in Japan.
That's right.
So it's nasty stuff. Conium maculatum or hemlock, a tall hollow stem plant with white umbrella-like flower clusters. Hemlock is most notorious as the poison used to execute the philosopher Socrates in 399 BC. Contains the alkaloid conium, which causes ascending paralysis. The victim remains fully conscious as their muscles gradually stop working, eventually leading to respiratory failure. It can be mistaken for wild carrot or cow parsley, making accidental poisoning a serious risk.
Man.
Wow.
Also, the Hemlock Society.
Yes. Yeah. You know? It's also the famous painting of Socrates taking the cup, right? Mm-hmm. That I think it was done by French painter David.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right? Okay. Yeah.
Jacques-Louis David.
Digitalis purpurea, or foxglove. Something you can still find in people's gardens.
I love foxglove.
That's a pretty plant.
They are pretty.
It is a really pretty plant. Beloved cottage garden plant with tall spires of tubular purple or white flowers. Foxglove is toxic in all its parts. It contains cardiac glycosides, particularly digoxin, which can cause fatal heart arrhythmias. Paradoxically, these same compounds are the basis for important heart medications used to treat congestive heart failure. The plant illustrates the fine line between medicine and poison that runs through the Alnwick garden.
That goes to one of your lines often, Ken, and that is the dosage is the poison, right? Mm-hmm. Take a little of this, you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought they got a blood thinner from Digitalis too, but I don't, I can't remember. Mm. Taxus spicata, English yew, something you don't see that often anymore, although my grandparents had two huge ones in front of their house.
I grew up with a hedge in my front yard.
Yeah. Long-lived evergreen tree or shrub, common in English churchyards. The yew is toxic in almost all its parts, bark, leaves, and seeds, though the red berry-like arrow surrounding the seed is not. Well, I'm not going to eat it. The toxin taxine causes cardiac and respiratory failure. Yew has a sinister history as a poison, is also yield the cancer drug
Taxol.
Taxol. its association with death and immortality makes it a fitting resident of the garden. Nerium oleander. I'm kind of surprised that would grow over in England.
But, yeah, me too.
That was something that surprised me in South Carolina. I'm sorry, Georgia. There were a lot of oleander
really
around the outskirts of Savannah.
Yeah. Popular ornamental shrub in warm climates. Oleander produces clusters of showy pink, red, or white flowers throughout the summer. Despite its beauty, it is extraordinarily toxic. All parts contain cardiac glycosides and other toxins that can cause vomiting, irregular heartbeat, and death. Even honey made from oleander nectar can be poisonous. A single leaf is said to be enough to kill a child. I'd never even thought about the honey part.
Yeah.
Although, talking about oleanders, Melanie and I went to the safari parks. They do an annual members night at the safari park. So we went up there. It was just a couple of weeks ago. Mm. We went up there for the evening. And in the parking lot where we parked, I had never seen it before. I'd never noticed it before. They had variegated oleander, but it was a double pink flower.
Mm-hmm. And, I used to have that one.
Yeah, yeah. And the double pink oleander, even the green one is a really pretty plant, but they don't drop their flowers. Mm. So when the flowers fade, you end up with all these dead, crispy flowers all over the plant. But when the flowers are fresh and in bloom, they're really pretty. It's a really pretty plant. I had never seen a variegated one before. Mm-hmm. So they're around.
In the botanic garden world, we always talked about how variegated plants can be very popular with the public. But invariably, I don't think I ever met anybody in that world that liked variegated plants. Because they, yellow variegation makes them look sickly and not very attractive, in my opinion. And that's my take on that one, too.
We had had a gentleman that worked for us for a long time, way back. And that was specifically what he collected. He loved variegated plants. Yeah. And he went out of his way to find variegated plants for his collection. I remember when there used to be a houseplant grower on Vulcan Avenue in Leucadia. It was Eva's Tropicals was the name of the place. And she used to grow, as a hanging basket, variegated St. Augustine grass.
Oh wow.
It was beautiful. I mean, it was absolutely beautiful. And it would spill out of the pots and just, and she would just grow it as a houseplant.
Wow.
It was very interesting.
Wow.
Very interesting.
Well, the Louis Armstrong song, do you know what it means to miss New Orleans? He talks about the oleanders in bloom in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. So, I don't think about that as being a Southern plant so much. Well, we can't grow them now because of Xylella. Oleander scorch. It's pretty much impossible to grow oleanders here now.
Oleander scorch. And then prior to that, it was oleander gall.
Yes.
That alone almost wiped out the oleander out of production. Mm-hmm. And then once they got that under control, then the Xylella came in, and that's pretty much.
I think we've touched on it in the past, though, but when I first came to California in 79, the I-5 as far north as, past Oceanside was nothing but oleander.
Yep.
Yeah.
The center divide was just, you couldn't see cars on the other side because there were just huge rows and shrubs of oleanders.
Yeah, no longer.
That is true. Yep. Yeah, you don't see that. Don't see that much anymore. Laburnum anagrioides. Laburnum, a popular British garden tree covered in cascading golden yellow flowers in spring. Laburnum is entirely poisonous, but its seeds are particularly so. They contain cysteine, an alkaloid that causes intense vomiting, convulsions, and potentially fatal respiratory failure.
But other than that, it's delicious.
Yeah. Children are especially at risk, often attracted by the seed pods that resemble pea pods. Despite its beauty, laburnum is one of the most dangerous plants found in ordinary British gardens. That's another one I'm not familiar with. Ioscamus niger, henbane. I have heard of henbane before. Yep. Yeah. A sticky, foul-smelling plant with pale yellow flowers veined in purple. Henbane has a long and dark history. It contains scopolamine, which cause hallucinations, delirium, and death. It was famously used by Dr. Holly Harvey Crippen, who poisoned his wife with hyoscine in 1910 in one of the most celebrated murder cases in British history. Historically, henbane was also an ingredient in witches' flying ointment. Well, you learn something new every day.
Yeah.
We've got some more of these to go over, but we need to take a quick break. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We'll be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back. More Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements, and we're talking about all kinds of stuff that you will find in the Alnwick Poison Garden over in Northumberland, England. Datura stramonium, or Jimson weed. That's another one that surprises me that it grows over there.
I'm surprised it would grow there.
Well, I guess if it goes dormant in the wintertime, because you figure out in the where it grows in the desert areas out here, it's going to get cold in the wintertime. So.
That's also devil's trumpet, right? Is that the other common name for that? Not angel's trumpet, but devil's trumpet.
True. Yeah. I've heard it called that. Yeah.
Dramatic plant.
The wildwood weed.
Yeah.
Grew wild on a farm, but we never knew what it was called.
Right.
Dramatic plant with large trumpet-shaped white or purple flowers and viciously spiny seed pods. Jimson weed contains powerful tropane alkaloids, including scopolamine and atropine. Has been used as a hallucinogen for centuries, but the margin between psychoactive dose and a lethal one is dangerously narrow.
Sergeant O'Keefe also famously painted.
Yes, she did.
Yes. Yes. It's actually a very pretty flower. It's huge. It's pretty,
Symptoms of poisoning include intense hallucinations, hyperthermia, seizures, and cardiac arrest. Well, that doesn't sound like a good time.
That's in the Solanaceae family, right?
Yeah.
Grows as weed across much of the world. Yes, it does. As a matter of fact, there were a couple of teenagers died from Jimson weed up in consuming Jimson weed. It was in Joshua Tree a few years ago, I think.
Yeah. There are little stands of it as you drive up to our house.
Yeah, you see it. You see it pretty frequently. It has kind of a velvety gray, gray green foliage.
Sometimes
to it.
With a little purple on the backside,
But the flowers really stand out against it. They contrast beautifully.
Yeah, it's
big white flower.
It's a pretty plant.
It looks like your angel's trumpet, Brugmansia, but instead of hanging down, they kind of like point up or horizontally.
Yeah. One of the controversial plants in the garden, Cannabis sativa, also known as marijuana. One of the garden's most controversial residents, cannabis requires a special home office license to grow at Alnwick. While widely used recreationally and increasingly in medicine, it is classified as a controlled substance in the UK. The plant is included as part of the garden's education mission around the dangers of intoxicating and narcotic plants, highlighting the blurred boundary between medicine, intoxicant, and poison. Okay. Papaver somniferum, opium poppy. That's a beautiful plant.
I love them.
That is really pretty.
They're very pretty.
Opium poppy produces beautiful, delicate flowers. I don't know why I'd call them delicate. They're light. It's like crepe paper, but they're huge.
Yeah.
I think the delicate is because of the crepe paper. Like most of the poppies, you know, they look very thin.
In shades of pink, red, white, and purple, it is grown widely in gardens across Britain, often without awareness of its dark properties. The milky sap from its unripe seed heads contains morphine, codeine, and other opiates. While these compounds have invaluable medical uses as painkillers, unrefined opium is highly addictive, and overdose can be fatal through respiratory depression. My grandparents had a stand of opium poppies in their backyard that would come up every year. I remember my grandmother would harvest the stems to use in dried flower arrangements. And she would harvest the seed off of them too. And replant and reseed every year. But it was just solid. And it has the foliage is kind of a strange color. It's kind of a bluish green color, But the flowers were just the one. They're
very pretty.
The one they had, it was solid red. I mean, just scarlet red, and they were as big as your hand. But absolutely beautiful plants.
Most of the ones I've grown have been purple, but the red ones are pretty too. And you could also use it for poppy seed muffins. They don't all have to be.
That's true. Yeah,
that's other true. Purposes.
I think she actually might have saved some of the poppy seeds for culinary use, as I recall. Let's see. Brugmansia, one of my favorites, angel's trumpets. Spectacular plant with enormous pendulous trumpet-shaped flowers that release a heady scent. Angel's trumpets are deeply poisonous. All parts contain tropane alkaloids, the same family of compounds found in deadly nightshade and henbane.
Yeah, I was going to say it makes sense.
Yeah, causing hallucination, tachycardia, paralysis, and death. Despite their dangerous nature, they are sometimes grown as ornamentals in British gardens, unaware of their lethal potential. That's got to be a tender perennial over there.
I would think it would have to be brought in probably.
I would think so. But you know that what's the yellow cultivar that you see fairly frequently around here?
Is Grimaldi?
Grimaldi.
Yeah.
The fragrance on that.
It's so good.
Oh my gosh, that is one of my favorite plants.
You know the thing with a lot of these plants. I did a lot of videos about Brugmansias too, because they're so spectacular and they smell so good. Mm-hmm. And I would put my nose in and just smell these, and we would get so much feedback from people. They'd say, "Oh, don't you know that's poisonous? Don't be smelling that. Don't encourage people to do that." Well, you're not going to die from smelling it.
No.
You've got to ingest the alkaloids, but it's so bitter that even if I touch those, lick my hand or something, I don't know how anybody would get a lethal dose. I mean, how would you eat that thing? that's really true with all these. You'd have to intentionally somehow ingest that, and it would not be pleasant. You know,
right?
No, I can't imagine it would be.
We were just talking. We have two angel trumpets, and we were just talking about moving one to the backyard to get more fragrance out of it because you pass it going into the house, but we want to make it where you sit because they are so fragrant. And we always talk about the ones at the Botanic Garden.
Yeah.
Especially at Christmas when they put all the lights in them. Oh, yeah. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are really pretty. We have one in our backyard, although it's been there it's probably been there close to 20 years now. And it's just not as vigorous as it used to be. Probably time to switch that one out.
Well, they are fertilizer hogs.
I was about to say, I was listening to Garden Talk once, and a guy named John Clements said that they were nutrient hogs and water hogs. So if you're feeding them and watering them, they'll come back and look great.
Yeah. I had a client, hello, Julie, Phyllis, and she had one in a big pot. And I told her, you got to get it out of that pot. Put it in a pot. If you have to keep it in a pot, put it in a pot two or three times larger than that one. She did it. And literally in a week, that thing responded. Latent buds that hadn't popped, suddenly all the auxins woke up. So you have to have a good size container, feed them a lot, and they're thirsty. But boy, they're spectacular.
And they need more sun than mine are getting.
Yeah.
Here's one I haven't heard of. Strychnos nux vomica, or strychnine tree.
That sounds like a good time.
Source of strychnine. One of the most bitter and violent poisons known. This tree seeds contain the alkaloids strychnine and brucine. Strychnine causes violent convulsions. The muscles contract so powerfully that the spine can arch backward in a posture called opisthotonosis. Yeah. And death follows from exhaustion or respiratory failure. It has featured in numerical historical poisoning cases and once used as a rat poison. I remember when it was used as a rat poison.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess you don't have to worry about the rats eating that tree.
Wow.
Ruta gravialens, rue. I can't stand rue. It's kind of a neat looking little plant, but the smell of it.
I just like the smell as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ancient herb with blue green leaves, small yellow flowers. Rue has been used in cooking, medicine, and magic for thousands of years. However, it is phototoxic. Contact with its sap, followed by sunlight, causes severe blistering chemical burns to the skin. Okay. Well, I'm not going to go out and rub the foliage to smell it anymore after reading that. I was not aware of that. Mm. It was once used, as an abortifacient and pest repellent. Alnwick Gardens discovered a weed growing in a clump of rue, illustrating how danger can hide in plain sight.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's, I'm not even sure why we sell it. Unless it's ornamental, because I've never come across a recipe that needs that.
It is a swallowtail host.
Okay.
For one, and then the other thing is, I've read in the past when I was looking it up that it can be used as a cat repellent. So if you put it in a garden where you're having problems with cats. It may help keep them away.
Okay. Euphorbia or spurge. Well, that covers a lot.
That's a big family.
Yeah. Spurge family includes a huge variety of plants, from ornamental garden shrubs to tropical succulents, and many produce a milky latex sap that is severely irritating to skin, eyes, and the digestive tract. Contact with sap can cause intense burning, blistering, and in the eyes, temporary or permanent blindness. Despite this, many euphorbias are popular garden plants. Their toxicity... unrecognized by the casual gardener. Probably the worst offender of that one that I could think of is sticks of fire.
Yeah.
That thing is nasty. If you get the sap on you, it's a popular plant. I'm really kind of surprised it's as popular as it is, but that's a tough one. And some of the euphorbias have so many spines on them, you can't even get close enough to them to get the sap on you. Let's see. Hellebores. I had heard that they were, hellebores were poisonous, but I hadn't really.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I saw this list.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Also known as the Christmas or Lenten rose, hellebores are prized by gardeners for their nodding flowers in midwinter and early spring. All parts of the plant are toxic, containing glycosides and alkaloids that affect the heart. Historically, hellebore was used in both medicine and magic. It was thought to cure madness, but ingestion causes burning of the mouth and throat, vomiting, convulsions, and potentially cardiac arrest.
Well, that stops your madness right there.
Yeah, that's a, wow.
He's not mad anymore.
Yeah. Although that's another plant that has grown in popularity over the past few years. There's been a number of different new hybrids have come out.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's a pretty plant in the right area.
And here, mostly shade.
Yeah.
And I like them in drifts. I've had them in clients' yards and at the botanic garden, where if you allow that to create a very nice drift, it's a spectacular look. But to me, they just get lost if you just have onesies, twosies.
Sure.
Here.
You have to have
a really nice mass planting.
Have to have a good clump of them. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We've been talking about the things that you will find in the Alnwick Poison Garden in Northumberland, England. We've got a few more to go over. We'll be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements, and we are talking about stuff that you will find in the Alnwick Poison Garden in Northumberland, England. And we have come to Colchicum autumnale, autumn crocus. We used to sell a lot of it as bulb during bulb season. And we sold it as a novelty because it was a pretty good sized bulb. It's about the size of a baseball. And people would buy the bulb and they would set it in their windowsill and it would sit there and it would flower and grow without any soil around it at all. Mm. And that was the novelty of it. I did know that it was toxic. That was one that I do remember. So resembling a harmless crocus and producing lilac flowers in autumn, long after its leaves have died down, the autumn crocus is lethally poisonous and has been mistaken for wild garlic. Okay, I don't know how you mistake it for garlic. Doesn't look anything like garlic. It contains colchicine, which interferes with cell division, causes symptoms similar to arsenic poisoning, intense vomiting, diarrhea, multi-organ failure, and death.
That's a good way to go.
Crocus and old lace.
If you're going to die, you don't want to die vomiting with diarrhea. I go a different way.
Colchicine does have medical uses in treating gout and certain inflammatory conditions. Okay. Veratrum, or false hellebore. That's one I'm not familiar with that one. Tall leafy plant with pleated leaves and sprays of small greenish white flowers. False hellebore is exceptionally toxic. Contains a complex mixture of steroidal alkaloids that cause a severe drop in heart rate and blood pressure, leading to cardiac failure. It has been fatally confused with wild garlic. These people are eating wild garlic. Yeah.
These foragers.
And other edible plants by foragers, even skin contact with the plant can cause irritation and tingling. Oh, man, that's stay away from that one. And
that's last, pretty flowers.
I love the name of this last one.
Gimpy Gimpy. Dendrosinide Moroides.
Well done.
One of the garden's more recent and extraordinary additions. The Gimpy Gimpy is an Australian stinging tree. You have to know that came from Australia.
It's right next to the snakes and the spiders.
We have one of the most painful plants on earth. Its leaves and stems are covered in tiny glass-like silicon needles that inject a complex neurotoxin venom on contact. The sting causes excruciating pain, described as being burned with hot acid, because cold acid, I guess, isn't hotter, isn't bad enough. Hot acid and electrocuted simultaneously.
Wow.
Pain that can last for months or even years. It is kept in a climate-controlled cage within the poison garden. Wow.
This would be a good subject for the TikTok filmers, you know, these young kids that eat Tide Pods, things like that. Maybe we'd get them a Gimpy Gimpy plant and see how that looks.
In the beginning, I was mentioning a book called that I had read, I do believe you turned me on to it. If not, you at least turned me on to the author, because we've both read another book of hers, but it's called Wicked Plants, The Weed That Killed Lincoln's Mother and Other Botanical Atrocities. And it's written by a woman by the name of Amy Stewart. And that plant is in it because she's in the synopsis. It's the sordid lives of plants behaving badly. A tree that sheds poison daggers.
Oh, that's goodness. This one.
Wow.
A glistening red seed that stops the heart. A shrub that causes paralysis. And a vine that strangles. Anyway, great book. Wow. If you're interested in
what I heard her speak once. She's a very good speaker.
If you're interested in what we just went through, the book will give you greater insight to all of the toxic plants out there.
And by the way, Alnwick Castle is a beautiful place to go to in England. And the Alnwick Rose, David Austin Rose, is one of my absolute favorite roses. It's combination, very fruity, raspberry, old rose scent together. And I highly recommend the Alnwick Rose. And it's just north of Newcastle, which Newcastle Brown Ale, hard to beat.
That's a good beer.
That's a good beer. And it is very good used in your fish and chips batter. That is my number one choice to make fish and chips with.
I will have to mention that to Melanie the time she does that.
Abraham Lincoln's mother died because of poisonous plants, because a cow had eaten snake root and she got the milk from that cow, and that's how she died.
So second generation.
I was not aware of that.
Wow.
You know, when they talk about on this Gimpy Gimpy, the silica needles, we've done it here at the nursery, you find it escaped. Stinging nettle.
Yes.
You find stinging nettle.
Sure.
And you look at it under the microscope.
Oh, my gosh. It looks like glass.
They look like glass needles on it. So you can figure out why it hurts so bad when you rub up against it.
But
it's really strange because it's such a green plant. But those needles that come on, they look just like glass coming off of them.
Certain bamboo species also have silica needles like that. And
oh, really?
I didn't know that.
Goodness. Yeah. I grabbed it was about the size of a torpedo coming up out of the ground, and and we would just bust culms off sometimes to keep them from growing into large the stalk. And so we'd kick them over just for ease of removing them. And so I grabbed one. It was about the size of a shell from a casing, and man, I don't think I felt okay for a week.
Oh, my God.
Wow. It just felt like it was in your hands?
Yeah. Just dozens and dozens of these silica needles all over the place. Be careful with the bamboo.
That reminds me of cow itch.
Yes.
I can't remember the botanical name for that.
Lagonaria.
Lagonaria, yeah.
Beautiful, cow itch tree.
Pretty pretty tree.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Beautiful flowers.
Beautiful flower. It's in the mallow family, yes. I believe. But man, those seed pods.
Yeah.
You don't want to touch them.
Yeah. Lagunaria puttersoni, I think.
I think you're right. I think you're correct. Somebody had brought in a bunch of seed pods one time, and this was longer ago than I care to remember. And they were sitting on a desk in the back of the nursery, and they were going to husk them for the mm-hmm. seeds to grow the plants. And I was walking through the warehouse and with another employee, and he looked over and he was like, "Oh, what's that?" And he grabbed one of the seed pods and crushed it in his hand. I'm like, no. And he's like, and he had just thousands and thousands of those little microscopic needles in his hand.
Yeah.
It's a nasty one to deal with.
It looks relatively benign.
It does.
It does.
It looks absolutely.
It is in the Malvaceae family.
Yeah, it looks absolutely.
And as a tree, it's actually very attractive.
Yeah.
It's rather narrow columnar tree, but.
Pretty flowers.
You don't want to mess with them.
Yeah. That's definitely one you want to watch out for. So anyway, if you're ever over in Northumberland, England, be sure to check out the Alnwick Poison Garden if you visit the Alnwick Castle while you're over there. George.
Sir.
Okay. Just a quick housekeeping detail there. What else have we got to talk about? You know what? I'm going to change it up here a little bit. There was 10 worst garden weeds, which I thought was
stinging nettle one of them.
It should be. One of them, bindweed. That was one of the ones that you...
That is a bad one.
I am pulling that. I pull that out every 3 days out of the garden because it comes up in big clumps on a single root. And mm-hmm. you might get those, but that root's still there.
That's rhizomatous, so it goes everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate it. Bermuda grass. Let's see. Kikuyu grass. I see it so much in Poway, particularly in people's lawns where, you know, you have to use something like Teflon ester or... could use triclopyr, you know, to eradicate it. But man, it grows so fast and it takes over your lawn in no time.
I know a lot of people love Bermuda grass because it's self-repairing. And I know, Ken, mm-hmm. you like it.
Yeah, right? I do.
It self-repairs and, you know, and it's dormant in the winter. You throw some winter rye in it and you have a nice green lawn. But it also invades everything. So if you have a good border, it works well. But if you don't, it ends up in potted plants mm-hmm. that are adjacent to the lawn after a while. So
yeah, I have not had any. Well, I have Tif Green Bermuda in my backyard, and it has not escaped a lawn area.
And do you use a real mower on it or rotary?
I think they use a rotary mower on it, which I prefer they use a real mower. Sure. But it's fine. And my grandfather's brother used to grow Tif Dwarf Bermuda.
Oh yeah.
And my grandparents had it in their front yard as a lawn, and there was never a weed in that.
Oh, I mean, no, it chokes everything out.
It looked like carpet.
Yeah.
It was a really pretty lawn. And then where my uncle would grow it, I mean, just acres of it at a time. And we used to grow, he grew it from it because it's, because it was a hybrid Bermuda, it was sterile.
Right.
So you couldn't grow it from seed.
You had to do it from stolens.
And he had
just plugs.
His own stolen making machine where he would cut the sod out of the field and then go and throw it into the machine and wash all the dirt off of it. And we used to sell the stolens at the nursery and they would come in 50-pound paper fertilizer bags for whatever. I can't remember which fertilizer he used, but he would save the bags. And then when they really needed stolens, they would jam them into that bag and bring them down. We used to get stolens for Tif Green Bermuda too. We got them from, we would get them from Butler's Mill.
We had
a cooler at the nursery just to keep stolens in.
Wow.
And it was kind of a homemade walk-in cooler that my dad's other uncle built. And I remember we used to stock it full of boxes. We used to sell a lot of that. We used to sell a lot of stolens now that I think about it.
Butler's Mill was a great place. I used to get a lot of my orchid supplies.
Where were they located?
On Naranja Street.
Naranja Street off of Euclid.
Off Euclid. Okay. Southeast, kind of.
All right.
Yeah. But yeah, they were around for a
long
time. They had the best the best redwood compost I had ever seen. Yeah. And it was
beautiful.
It was really pretty. It was just a perfect consistency. But it was almost like redwood shavings. Mm-hmm. And I remember because it wasn't fully composted, they had to put fertilizer in with it too to counteract it. And man, there were times where that stuff just smelled like ammonia, like you wouldn't believe. Yeah.
So it wasn't organic fertilizer.
It was not organic. No, not organic. You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Holman and John Clements. We're going to be back next week with another hour. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, independent and family-owned since 1928. For more information about plants, products, expert advice, news, classes, podcasts, and more, visit walteranderson.com.